This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmefford.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us again. So, was 2018 really the year of global revolt against climate change policy? We saw the weeks of riots in France against carbon taxes and even Washington state citizens voting down a carbon tax ballot measure for the second time in 2 years. And this happened even as Australia and Canada pushed back against climate policies. Maybe that's why we're seeing the left doubling down on the so-called climate change crisis, with Meet the Press devoting an entire show to the topic recently and announcing, Chuck Todd did anyway, that climate deniers would not even be allowed to come on the show. Well, we're going to get some perspective on all of this now from Dr. Cal Beisner. He is founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Great to welcome you back, Dr. Beisner. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Janet. Very glad to be back with you. And, of course, the easy way to win a debate is just simply not to allow the other side to, yeah. to have a say.
I know. I was going to say,
course,
are you...
It's not a debate anymore, doesn't it?
No, you're exactly right. I was going to say, I guess you can't get on Meet the Press then, Dr. Beisner. If you're not on board with the Chuck Todd view of climate change, then you're out of luck.
Yeah, right. And what's fascinating, of course, is that they pin the label denier on anybody who doesn't get on board with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, the fact is, the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, which, by the way, includes in its nearly 70 scholars in the network, some of the world's top climate scientists, our position all along has been that human activities probably do contribute something to the global warming that we've experienced over about the last 50 years or so, and that carbon dioxide emitted from fossil fuel burning to create, to generate electricity and to run our cars and so on, probably certainly does contribute significantly to that. That's been our view all along. But you are a denier if what you think doesn't line up with the notion that these CO2 emissions are going to bring on catastrophic warming that is going to put human civilization at risk, maybe even human survival at risk.
Yeah.
If you don't think that, then you're a denier. Well, that's absurd. I mean, the vast majority of scientists involved, even those involved in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change under the UN, would not accept that notion.
No. Well, it was kind of interesting to see these compiled lists of some of the places around the globe where they were fighting back against some of these climate change policies.
Yeah.
What was your reaction to this assertion that 2018 marked a number of instances where people were saying, I'm not on board with this? Is that a significant change, or how do you see it?
Well, I see it really as sort of the rubber starting to meet the road on this. The whole climate change bandwagon, so to speak, has been largely in the realm of theory, in the realm of proposals. But when we start actually putting things into concrete, one of the ironies there is that the manufacture of concrete is one of the biggest emitters of carbon dioxide in the world. But ignore that for a minute. When it comes to concrete application of policy proposals, when it comes to people actually having to pay higher prices for electricity, for gasoline, and frankly for everything across the board, because it takes energy to produce and transport and market everything that we use, right? When people actually start having to pay those higher prices in order to supposedly reduce global warming, then they think, oh, not so sure I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, to put it in a very large scale, I think a whole lot of people have figured out that spending $23.3 to $46.6 trillion to reduce global average temperature by 0.1 degree Fahrenheit in the year 2100 is not a good deal.
No, it's a bad deal.
And that's the cost of implementing the Paris Climate Agreement.
Yeah, well, it was interesting over at Town Hall. They were talking about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. You just mentioned them in the Special Report 15. And I found this very interesting. They claim governments worldwide must make unprecedented changes in all aspects of society. They want to spend $40 trillion by 2035 on renewable energy. And when it comes to carbon taxes, they want to impose carbon taxes that climb to $5,500 per ton of carbon dioxide by 2030. I mean, talk about an ambitious plan here, but when the rubber meets the road, as you point out, are people going to put up with that? I mean, this is an exorbitant amount of money. This is a redistribution of wealth scheme. I think more and more people are seeing through this. Where does it head?
Yeah. Well, where I see it headed is toward the ash heap of history, where it will join its cousin, the communist movement.
Good. I hope
frankly,
so.
Frankly, anybody who's familiar with the history of energy technology and how we've gone from starting out using nothing but the fruits and vegetables that you could scavenge in a hunter-gatherer society, and then a little bit of meat when you hunted. That was all the energy humans used for thousands of years, and then began little by little to use a little bit of wind, and then fire, burning wood and dung and things like that, and then we moved to things like peat and coal, and then to petroleum, natural gas, and then nuclear. What you know, if you know anything about this history, is that massive changes in energy technology, in energy infrastructure, take a long, long time.
Yeah.
And right now the world has trillions of dollars invested in an energy infrastructure that is largely accommodated to generating electricity and fueling vehicles from wood from coal and natural gas and petroleum, and then a little bit from nuclear and a little bit from hydro. The notion that we're going to switch in two or three decades, even in 6 or 8 or 10 decades, from those to wind and solar and other renewables is simply historically ignorant.
Right. Well, it's interesting to me, too, because Michael Bloomberg was one of the guests on that Meet the Press climate change special. You probably saw him, but for listeners who didn't see him, Michael Bloomberg was bragging about the fact that he's been partnering with the Sierra Club, and they've been successful in shuttering more than half the coal-fired power plants in the United States and another 15% of them in Europe. But this is the same guy who, it was reported, flew giant blocks of ice to London on a private plane to demonstrate the effects of climate change. I mean, we laugh about Al Gore's mansion and his carbon footprint and Leonardo DiCaprio and all the rest of these hypocrites. But do people put this together? Is that part of the equation as well, that they say, oh, yeah, buddy, OK, I see you're one really great ideological environmentalist, until it involves your own personal choices?
Yeah, I do think an awful lot of people are seeing that. And frankly, they're saying, when we see these guys making massive changes in their own personal lifestyles, then we'll think that they're serious about this stuff.
There you go.
Until then, no, we don't.
Right. That's right. So what did you think of some of the comments from people like Bernie Sanders and Jerry Brown, the governor of California, saying that fighting climate change is akin to fighting the Nazis or dealing with a devastating military attack? Why are they over-the-top hyperbole there?
Well, I think over-the-top hyperbole comes into play in public discourse when you realize that your strategy, that your goals are failing.
Yeah.
You come to depend more and more on trying to just scare people into jumping on your bandwagon instead of actually persuading them through cool, calm, collected reasoning. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this resort to catastrophic predictions because the reality is just not cooperating with the policy agenda. I mean, let's look at it this way. The hallmark of real science is always testing predictions.
Hang on a second. We'll leave it right there because we have to pause for a break. We'll come back with Dr. Cal Beisner talking about climate change policy and what's headed our way in 2019. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. It's Sanctity of Human Life Month, the month we set aside each year to remember the millions of lives lost through the scourge of abortion. But even while we mourn the loss of so many babies, a new majority of pro-abortion politicians in the House of Representatives are looking to push legislation that would expand access to abortion. It's more important than ever before to fight for human life. That's why we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn funds pregnancy centers across the nation so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. Ultrasound is a game changer because when abortion-minded women actually see their babies in their wombs for themselves, 80% of the time, they choose life. We want to save the lives of 250 preborn children this January, and we know it can be done, but we do need your help. Would you please join us at Janet Mefford Today to support the Ministry of Preborn and give life to 250 babies this January? For $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. A gift of $22 will provide 1 ultrasound, and every gift helps. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes directly towards saving babies. Think of the children in the womb this January. You can get involved, and you can help save a life for a gift of $140. 5 free ultrasounds will be offered to women in crisis pregnancies. During this Sanctity of Human Life Month, let's do more than talk about abortion. Let's save some lives. Please call now with your gift, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Great to have you with us. Dr. Cal Beisner, my guest, founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And we're talking about some of the climate change rhetoric that's been flying around. And it seems there were quite a few people in 2018 who were not hopping on to the climate change bandwagon in terms of expanding policies and implementing new carbon taxes and whatnot. But I wanted to let you pick up, Dr. Beisner, where we unfortunately had to leave off there, where we went to the break. You were making a really good point.
Well, thanks. You know, we were talking about how the alarmists are resorting to ever increasingly just over-the-top ideas, like fighting climate change is as important as it was to fight the Nazis, or as winning a war, things like that. I mean, this is just simply absurd. But what we really have to go to is the truth about the hallmark of real science. I was mentioning that hallmark is testing predictions by real-world observations. And what they've been predicting, for instance, in the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, according to their computer models, the world should have been warming by 3/10 of a degree Celsius every decade from 1980 to the present, and earlier decades as well. But 1980 to the present is the period over which we have the very best data, real-world observations, to check that prediction. And what those real-world observations tell us, and this is whether we're looking at satellite data or weather balloon data, or at what's called the reanalysis data, which is from a combination of various different sources, all three of these tell us that the actual rate of warming from 1980 to the present has instead been about 0.13 degrees Celsius, less than half, slightly over a third of what the models predict. But what that means is that the models do not accurately reflect the way the actual climate system works. And to the extent that they get any of their predictions right, They're getting them right by accident, not because they really understand the climate system.
Interesting.
So, you know, when sound science that tests predictions by real-world observations doesn't support your claims of you know, catastrophe around the corner, you have to kind of leave the field of science behind and turn to fear-mongering.
Yeah. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Well, if you're going to move people in the direction you want them to go politically, then you have to do some of that, because clearly most of the people listening to you are not going to be scientists. They're not going to even know the right questions to ask in order to support what they're saying. Yeah.
Well, and that's why at the Cornwall Alliance, we're constantly trying to really educate people, to give them the tools of scientific and economic and, for that, frankly, also theological and philosophical analysis, so they can critique these ideas, think them through well for themselves, and come to reasoned conclusions. For instance, this month, we're giving away a copy of a wonderful new book called Population Bombed, Exploding the Link Between Overpopulation and Climate Change, to anybody who makes a donation to us of any size, literally any size. It's a great new book, and it addresses an issue that I know is dear to you, and that is the whole link up of the anti-population growth movement with the climate alarmist movement.
Yeah.
You've got people telling us that we have to reduce human population in order to fight climate change, because after all, people using energy are the main cause of climate change. This book just absolutely destroys that notion, and it's very well done.
Well, that's great. That's great.
People can find out how to do that, how to get that, if they'll just subscribe to our free email newsletter at cornwallalliance.org.
Terrific. Well, going back to the subject of coal, you had mentioned some of the fossil fuels and the discussions that are made in the press about whether or not we need to transition to clean energy and all this stuff that's gone on.
Yeah.
What about the issue of coal? Because that has been, for example, an issue that has been near and dear to the heart of the president. He wants to, you know, bring back jobs, and I guess he's easing up on some regulations that affect some of the coal power plants. But you have people like Bloomberg trying to shut them down, even as there was a story a couple weeks ago in The Telegraph, you might have seen this, that said that some of the oldest coal-fired power plants in Britain had to be fired up to meet the power need during a cold snap. So, I mean, what is the truth about coal and its future?
Yeah.
Is it an old industry that's just gone the way of the dinosaur? What are your thoughts on it?
It's a mixed situation, a fairly complex truth, Janet. You know, first off, coal is a much better power source than wind or solar in that it is abundant, it is affordable, it is reliable, and most important, it's dispatchable. That means that you can get the electricity you need from coal all the time, anytime you want it, whereas with wind and solar, you can be stuck with no generation going on because the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing. And by the way, very, very cold times tend to be the periods when there's the least wind. And that's exactly what Britain experienced recently, and they had to bring up these coal-fired power plants again to replace all the wind generation that wasn't going on. But coal has lost out partly because of overregulation in the name of fighting climate change, but also partly simply because the mining for natural gas has become so much less expensive with horizontal fracking,
right,
that natural gas has simply taken away a lot of coal's market. And that's going to continue as long as the cost of getting natural gas out of the earth is as low as it is right now. So, you know, we don't want to see coal plants and coal mines shuttered because of overregulation. But neither should we want to distort the marketplace and say, oh, we want to give coal a special advantage.
Yeah.
There should be no advantages given by government to anything. Just simply let the market decide which energy sources we use, in what mixes, in what combinations, because that way what happens is that people are going to find the most efficient, the most cost-effective ways of meeting their needs.
Very good. Yeah. Now, heading into 2019, what do you see as some of the big issues ahead on the climate change front? What is to come? I know there was this recent international climate conference held in Poland, and the Trump administration was kind of doubling down on the expansion of fossil fuels, including coal. But where do things stand right now? Obviously, the president took us out of the Paris Climate Accord. He's done some very good things for America, in my opinion. But what do you see coming ahead in the new year on this front?
Well, I think some of the big challenges for us are, first of all, to deal with the deep state problem.
Yeah.
The upper levels of the Trump administration have reflected the president's own views about climate change and have sought to have the United States back off from such things. But the U.S. EPA, the Department of Interior, the Energy Department, and so on, their lower-level bureaucracies are still absolutely flooded with people who came in under Obama and, frankly, also Bush before Obama. Mm-hmm. And many of these people are still pushing the climate alarmist agenda through their positions in government. So what we need to see is an increasing replacement of those people by people whose views would line up with President Trump's. Another of the major things that should be on our agenda is getting a reversal of the EPA's 2009 endangerment finding on CO2. This was a finding, supposedly, I put that word in quotes, a finding by the EPA in 2009 that carbon dioxide emissions posed a significant threat to public health. That finding was not based on good science. It was not based on the proper studies that the law required. And frankly, it needs to be reversed. There are a number of different organizations that are working on studies that persuade that needs to be reversed. And we need to get the administration and the public at large aware of that. So that's a major issue. And then finally, I'd say, the hurdle for us to jump off to that after that is that we need to get the United States out of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the sort of granddaddy organization of the Paris Climate Agreement, before that the Kyoto Protocol. Everything about climate change fighting on a global scale is under the UNFCCC. The United States should get out of it, and we should have gotten it out of it years ago when it recognized the Palestine Liberation Organization as an independent state. Ugh. And U.S. law actually requires that the United States not fund any organization that does that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we haven't implemented that law yet.
Yeah, overdue. Do you have confidence that President Trump will do the last thing that you mentioned? Because he's been pretty good about, you know, airing his views and doing what the UN may not want him to do. Is there any movement on that front and getting out of that panel?
I haven't seen any significant movement on that front yet. I think that what's been happening is it's an incremental battle, Janet.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that we've managed to say that we're getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement. We're not fully out of it yet, actually. It takes about a two-year process to get out of it, and he announced it in June of 2017, so we've got another almost half a year to go. But that was a good step. And we'll just have to see if he can follow on with additional steps. His appointment of Will Happer as his science advisor was a wonderful stroke of genius. Happer is a good friend and a brilliant, brilliant scientist.
Great.
Who I think will steer him in the right directions on these things.
Well, that's really good. And I agree with you wholeheartedly about the deep state problem, the holdovers from previous administrations, and this climate religion, as I like to call it, that is really, you think about it, we don't have time to get into all of the paganism involved here, Dr. Breisner, that I know you're so familiar with. But people can check out cornwallalliance.org, find out more, and get the resource with a donation. And it's great to talk to you, Dr. Breisner. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks very much, Janet. God bless.
All right. God bless you, too. We'll be right back. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmeffer.com. We are back on Janet Meffer Today. As we know, the U.S. Supreme Court recently agreed to decide the fate of that 40-foot war memorial cross located on state land in suburban Maryland. At issue is whether or not this peace cross, which honors those great war heroes who died during World War I, amounts to a government endorsement of religion. Now, as my next guest notes, the U.S. Supreme Court may be the last hope for the Bladensburg World War I Veterans Memorial. We're going to talk about it today with Kelly Shackelford, president and CEO of First Liberty Institute, who has just written an op-ed about it in the Baltimore Sun. And Kelly, it's great to have you with us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you. Well, I know this case has been going on for quite a while. I know you and I have talked about this case quite a few times. But for those not familiar with us, could you give us just a brief history on why this cross became so controversial?
Well, it goes back almost 100 years. This was a memorial that was put up by the American Legion and by mothers who lost their sons in World War I. It was to honor the 49 men who died in World War I from that county. It's a county right outside of D.C., so it's really close to D.C. And when they put it up originally, it's a cross, and that's what was used. If you look anywhere around the world at the markers that's used for World War I memorials, they use the same essential cross to represent the sacrifice of all the people. And there were 49 men who died, and it sat there, and you think, well, you know, what's the problem? Well, years later, because this is close to D.C., the government wanted to build a highway by there, and so they did, and they took the land over, and they didn't want to disturb the memorial, so they just kind of made the highway go around it. Well, all of a sudden, after all these years, the American Humanist came along and said, in American Humanist Association, and said, hey, wait, you can't have a veterans memorial that's a cross on government land. And we wanted the district court, which we should have, but at the Court of Appeals, we had a bizarre decision, in my opinion. They said that after almost 100 years, this memorial, this cross, is now unconstitutional and right. It's going to have to be removed or torn down. And, you know, Janet, that's bad enough because what that would mean to the families who are still alive, who have their relatives who that was honoring, that the idea of moving that or destroying it is just beyond the pale as far as they're concerned. But within this Court of Appeals district, this Federal Court of Appeals, is not just this Bladensburg Veterans Memorial, but Arlington National Cemetery. So if they don't overturn this, they're going to have to go into Arlington, and they're going to have to tear down the large freestanding crosses that are in Arlington, and I think most people just can't even imagine that happening, but that's why we're at the Supreme Court right now.
That would be devastating. Well, you explain in the op-ed about this lemon test that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals used as rationale for saying that this cross was unconstitutional. You kind of take that to task, but explain for people, if you would, what the lemon test really is and why it falls short in this case in determining whether or not that memorial should remain.
Sure, absolutely. And before I forget, if anybody wants any of the info on this, they can go to First Liberty, spell out the word firstliberty.org, and you'll see there's a cross as part of the things on the front page where they can sign a petition to support not removing it, and they can get all the information they want. They can even see the briefs, everything that's filed at the Supreme Court. But this test, you're talking about the lemon test, is what justices in the past have come up with to try to apply the Establishment Clause. You know, for those who don't remember this stuff off the top of their head, right at the beginning of the First Amendment are the religion clauses. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And I think most people know this is about protecting the free exercise of religion, and we don't want there to be an established government religion like, you know, you have to go to the, you know, this church like they had in England.
Right.
And that's what the Establishment Clause is there for. Well, unfortunately, we've had a bunch of judges now for many years that have been coming up with tests and approaches, and they've used things like separation of church and state and other concepts which aren't in the Constitution to make these tests. And so the Lemon Test is built upon this idea of a strict separation. And what it's done, Janet, is it's created almost the government being hostile to religion, where if you see something religious, a symbol or anything else in public, all of a sudden people get nervous, like maybe there's something wrong. The founders would be appalled at that. That is not what they were trying to do. And so we are saying, look, all you have to do is look at a case like this to see that if you're applying a test and it strikes down a veterans memorial that's been up for almost 100 years because it's a cross, there's something wrong with your test.
Yeah.
Because the founders had, well, there's plenty of religious symbols, religious imagery all throughout our history, and the founders had no problem with that and would have had no problem with these types of things in public. And this sort of, you know, creating this hostility where the government sniffs around and has to tear down any religious symbols is the exact opposite of what we were after with the First Amendment. Not a government hostile to religion, but a government that was for religious freedom and for religion. It just didn't want the government coercing any of us towards or against anything.
Yeah, well, now, when you're talking about the Lemon Test, suggesting that a reasonable observer might look at something like this and see it as an endorsement of religion, who gets to decide whether or not the observer is reasonable? I mean, if this person is part of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, I wouldn't put that person in the reasonable category. So how in the world do you, it's so subjective.
It's totally subjective. It ends up, and this is what we told the court. We said, look, this is embarrassing. We have cases where we're literally trying to determine if there's a Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph close enough to the manger scene to make it constitutional.
Oh, please.
That should not be happening in the United States. And the idea that nobody knows what the law is and everybody's scared, it ends up shutting down religious, you know, parts of our history, our heritage, religious freedom. And that, again, that was never what the founders intended. What we've asked them to do here, go away from these tests that have been created and go back to the Constitution and what it really says and what the founders are really doing. And that is, there are really two clauses. One is, we don't want the government establishing a church for us, because then they could try to force us to support that church or go to that church or whatever. And we don't want them interrupting our free exercise of religion. So it's sort of a positive and a negative coercion. What we're concerned about is the government interfering or coercing us. Not the fact that some religious symbol exists on government land. That you know, the idea of sort of religious cleansing our country is totally against everything this country is really about. So we're hopeful not only to win, because what this means for this memorial and the families that are involved and their you know, loved ones who are still honored there, but all the veterans' memorials across the country. But even further than that, let's get back to the Constitution and let's stop this sort of government being hostile to religion and creating these situations where we use tests that are so bizarre that they would actually overturn a memorial that's been up for almost 100 years and literally require us to go into Arlington National Cemetery and to tear down crosses that are in that cemetery as well.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Do you have renewed hope in this case, Kelly, now that Brett Kavanaugh sits on the Supreme Court? How much stock do you put in the changing of the makeup of the court as you head into the arguments?
I think it means a lot. I really do. I think we've got five justices who believe in a more traditional interpretation of the Constitution, which is not making things up or going by public opinion today. That's not their job. Their job is to go back and, what did the Constitution say? What is the original meaning? And again, we haven't had five justices like that since the 1920s. I mean, people don't realize that. And so I think it's going to make a difference. I really do think we are going to return to what our Constitution says and not sort of justices becoming politicians, which I don't think any of us really want. And I think that's why it's important to put judges on the court who don't want to do good themselves, like for what they think policy is, but what they feel they're supposed to do, and they are, is to really restrain themselves and say, no, what was passed? What does the statute say? What does the Constitution say? Because these people are on the court for the rest of their lives, and we don't, they're not, you know, responsive to us like our congressmen.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on this case. Kelly Shackelford from First Liberty Institute. Check them out at firstliberty.org. Thanks a lot, Kelly. We'll be back on Janet Meffer Today after this. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. How can Christians stand on God's word at a time when radical activists want to compromise the church on the issue of biblical sexuality? A rising tide of LGBT activism is becoming apparent inside our churches. Wearing a religious facade, these activists talk about LGBT Christians and sexual minorities, and their goal is to move our churches away from the word of God. It's time for the church to defend biblical truth without compromise. That's why I'd like to invite you to join me, Janet Mefford, at the God's Voice Conference, a biblical response to the queering of the church. Sponsored by First Stone Ministries, God's Voice will bring clarity to the confusion surrounding revoiced sexuality and identity. Our team of experts will demonstrate how the language of the LGBT Christian movement is rooted not in the Bible, but in the same ideology that has wreaked havoc on our culture. The God's Voice Conference will take place February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City, and we want to see you there. It's time for the church to bow the knee to God's voice. To register or for more information, visit godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. We're back on Janet Mefford today. Great to have you with us. And of course, it is Sanctity of Human Life Month. I think every month ought to be Sanctity of Human Life Month, but I'll take it. I'm excited every time January rolls around because it does focus the attention of all of us as Christians on the sanctity of human life. And that's a very important thing. We've had a real holocaust in this nation when it comes to preborn babies. And that's why we're really excited about partnering again with the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn funds pregnancy centers across America so they can provide free ultrasounds to women who are in crisis pregnancies. And I'll tell you what, this is one of the absolute best ways of saving unborn babies' lives, because when women receive an ultrasound, even if they're abortion-minded, 8 out of 10 of them will choose life. Because there's no argument that can really be made that will cut across the reality that a mother is looking at her own baby and her own baby's heart beating. There's just, it almost doesn't even need to be explained. It's so powerful, and it's such an effective way of getting women to change their minds about abortion. You can help out. We want to give life to 250 babies this January. And for a gift of $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasounds to women who come into these pregnancy centers. A gift of $28 will provide 1 ultrasound. Every single gift helps. You can call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Now, I want you to listen to this testimony explaining the importance of ultrasound in saving preborn lives.
I just heard you talking about the ultrasound and saving babies' lives, and I can make that up close and personal because I'm involved with a pro-life clinic right here in Appleton. And we do ultrasounds weekly. And last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded. And when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her. And she said, "I just can't allow this baby to be killed," were her own words. And then we were able to share the gospel. Sometimes we were able to give out a Bible if they're open and just minister to her the truth, the scientific truth, and God's love. And I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
It really is. So if you'd like to get involved and help us support the important ministry of preborn, again, you can call now 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Again, a gift of $28 will provide one free ultrasound for a woman in a crisis pregnancy. And to provide five free ultrasounds, it takes a gift of $140. Any amount helps. And if you could call now, you'll really be making a difference during the Sanctity of Human Life Month. The number again, 855-402-BABY. And thank you so much. I want to get into a little bit about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I don't know. There is beginning to be a debate about her that perhaps not so much attention needs to be paid to her because it's ridiculous. When you have somebody who's an avowed socialist and young and very, very uninformed and very ignorant and says silly things every time she is put in front of a reporter, there is a tendency to want to publicize it because you really, for political reasons, a lot of people say, well, we want people to understand the direction the Democrat Party is going. On the other hand, other people are saying, please don't give this woman any oxygen in terms of her agenda. Please just stop. But I can't resist because here she was on 60 Minutes, and you might have been able to see this interview. But it's unbelievable some of the stuff that is coming out of her mouth. I want to play this one first. This is the new congresswoman saying the real problem in America is that Democrats compromise too much. Listen to cut one.
You're willing to compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just about what we choose to compromise. My personal opinion, and I know that my district and my community feels this way as well, is that we as a party have compromised too much and we've lost too much of who we're supposed to be and who we are. And
the Democratic Party has lost.
I think so. I think we've compromised things that we shouldn't have compromised, whether it's judgeships with Mitch McConnell, whether it's compromising on climate change. I think there are some things that we've compromised a little bit too much on. But am I open to compromise on certain ways to get things done? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's wonderful to compromise, but I really don't think anybody could make a very sound case for the Democrats compromising with Republicans too much. I wish she would have been pressed on that a little bit more than she was in that particular clip, because I don't see the Democrats compromising on the wall. Do you? I don't see the Democrats compromising on defunding Planned Parenthood. I see them doubling down. I don't see them compromising on the issue of taxes. I don't see them doing anything with climate change compromise. What is she even talking about there? But of course, what's been getting an awful lot of traction is her discussion of this Green New Deal and how she envisions Americans should fork over more cash. Listen to cut two.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
This would require the raising taxes.
There's an element where, yeah, there people are going to have to start paying their fair share in taxes.
Do you have a specific on the tax rate?
You know, you look at our tax rates back in the 60s, and when you have a progressive tax rate system, your tax rate, you know, let's say from zero to $75,000 may be 10% or 15%, et cetera. But once you get to like the tippy tops, on your 10 millionth dollar, sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60 or 70%. That doesn't mean all $10 million are taxed at an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
I don't even know what to say to that. So you want to go back to the years before the Reagan tax cuts? You want to go back to those 70% numbers because that worked out really, really well. You don't remember the Carter years, of course, Miss Ocasio-Cortez, because you weren't living back then. But what? Well, this is just socialism. It's just socialism. Yeah, we'll just get rid of fossil fuels. Really? Are you some kind of energy genius now, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez? I know there's a temptation to just listen to this and say, why do you even give it any credence whatsoever? She doesn't know what she's talking about. But she's the new star. She's 29 years old. She's cute. You got to listen to the 29-year-old cute congresswoman, don't you? Even though she's a radical, which, by the way, she fully admits. Listen to this cut. Cut three.
What you are talking about, just big picture, is a radical agenda compared to the way politics is done right now.
Well, I think that it only has ever been radicals that have changed this country. Abraham Lincoln made the radical decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the radical decision to embark on establishing programs like Social Security. That is radical.
Do you call yourself a radical?
Yeah, you know, if that's what radical means, call me a radical.
Okay, well, you're a radical. You're definitely a radical, but I don't recall Abraham Lincoln being a communist. And I don't recall Social Security being the greatest idea that was ever conceived, because we already know upcoming generations, it's very, very likely that their Social Security will not be as robust as previous generations have had it, partly because we have been killing off the next generation. Who in the world is funding the older generations as they age? I mean, come on. But she's a radical. And by the way, over at the Daily Signal, they point to the Americans for Tax Reform numbers showing that such a scheme that she envisions would mean that her constituents in New York City would pay a maximum income tax rate of 82.6%. So why limit it to that? Why would you stop at 82.6? Just take it all. You know what? Here's the truth. These people have an insatiable desire to take everything you have. And if they were able to take absolutely everything you have, what person in this country who has any degree of well-informed knowledge about socialism thinks their lives would get better if you gave more power to the government in any area of life? It is unconscionable to even take this stuff seriously. And it does affect what this really is saying is they want to take away your freedom. Yes, they want to take away your money. But what happens when all your money belongs to the government? You're not free anymore. And it's just obvious in more of her policies, and we'll get rid of fossil fuels, and you got to be able to change and make sure that everything is wind and solar. Does she know anything about any of this? Nah, she's cute and she dances well. I guess that's all we really need to pay attention to. No, these are the days in which we really need to understand the facts on the ground and reject this stuff outright as good patriotic Americans who are committed to freedom, liberty, and the American way. Thanks for joining us. We got to go. We thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you again next time here on Janet Mefford Today.